In the weeks following Super Bowl XL, Detroiters are still wondering what the long-term implications for the city will be. Although the Super Bowl is at most a three-hour event, it represents a model of development that has been unfolding in Detroit for decades. This is a model that depends upon corporate investments coming in from outside of the city, the development of downtown, and an influx of high-income housing. In short, gentrification. But for as long as city planners, developers, and politicians have advanced this model, there have been communities that have resisted it. Located in the shadows of the newly built Ford Field, Brush Park is one neighborhood that has spent the last several decades fighting for its life amidst rampant gentrification.
Well, see, what they're doing is they're demolishing all of our historical sites. Down there, they just try to cover up one of the underground tunnels. See, because right here in this house, they have the Underground Railroad.
For the past 10 years, Gwen Mingo, chair of the Brush Park Citizens District Council, has been defending the history and dignity of her neighborhood.
On Winder between Vobian and Brush, there's a tree called the Tree of Life. And a lot of the old folks would sit under the tree and they would tell the history. Our history, African-American history, was never lost because they would always be there under the Tree of Life. All this, they called it the Great Black Strip because everything was happening. And people were just coming from all over the world to come down here and just be a part of this magic with all these other things going on. You had the war, you had people moving here from the South and all this stuff, industry and the Big Three and all that. And people were moving here, getting very, very wealthy. There's a thrust to remember Brush Park as Little Paris and Piety Hill instead of, hey, this is where Paradise Valley was. Hey, what about where Hastings was? Hey, what about Black Bottom? And see, the thing is that all of this was connected. But when that freeway went through, people started getting disconnected. The fires that really devastated this community happened between late 1997 and 1999. In that period of time, they probably had at least 500 or 600 fires down here. And I lived through that. When there was a fire, I would make one call, and it would ring all the way around the community. Is it you? Are you all right? Whatever. And then it would come back to my house. We had one of the most beautiful communities when I moved here that you could imagine. Immediately, I became over the Citizens District Council. In 1998, I was really learning. And probably 1999, it just dawned on me that, hey, they're getting ready to get rid of everybody here. So I started writing and talking and walking and going everywhere, telling the story. When I first started really getting involved, I had so much protection. The city sent a bulldozer out to bulldoze my fence, and they were surrounded by people, like 50 or 60 people that said they'd kill them if they didn't get out of here. The fires and demolitions, accidental or whatever they called them, the structural damages that facilitated the taking of the Brush Park Historic District. And then eventually everybody was gone. This development is not going to be successful because of the spirit in which it was done.
The story of Brush Park highlights how unaccountable corporate development is destroying historic African-American neighborhoods and displacing some of the city's poorest residents. One of the major disasters facing low-income people across the city is the sweeping number of utility shutoffs that take place every winter. Maureen Taylor is an anti-poverty activist with the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization. She commented on this issue at a recent community forum in Detroit's Cass Corridor.
The fact that DTE, since September the 1st, has been disconnecting 6,700 clients, 6,700 individual households, have had lights and gas turned off since September the 1st, every month. September, October, November, December, January, this is not February. Multiply 6 times 6,700.
One of the reasons why utility bills in Detroit are so high is that we are paying for an infrastructure that was meant to support a population of 2 million. Today, that population is less than 900,000. Some believe that because the city has been so devastated by abandonment, that there is a need for new housing to be built and for people with money to move back into the city. In a 2004 editorial in the Detroit News, Wayne State economics professor Alan Goodman reported that from the years 1970 to 2000, more than 160,000 houses were abandoned or destroyed in Detroit. He insists that, quote, a resurgent Detroit requires a vibrant housing market, end quote. Towards this end, the city has been providing tax incentives for people in the suburbs to relocate to the city. Ron Scott, longtime activist with the Detroit Coalition Against Police Brutality, comments on this phenomenon.
There are people moving in here, but I would like to see the people whose mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins have really built this city benefit from the future.
Scott believes that merely reversing the tides of white flight is not enough. He maintains that whatever development takes place must do so within a framework of justice. Leading up to the Super Bowl, Detroit has seen an unprecedented level of investment from suburban residents, companies, and developers.
Suddenly, there was an increased focus on the infrastructure downtown, developing and building, replacing cement fixtures on the street, better lighting, all those kinds of things. Now, this is the first time that's happened in about 40 years, I mean. And it's reflective that those individuals who disinvested from the city could have done that 40 years ago if they had chosen to. So the issues of racism, classism, in terms of moving out of the city and leaving it desolate was a very, very intentional kind of thing. And now folks can come back, get the land, get the buildings and stuff for virtually nothing and make huge profits on them. I don't look to Detroit Renaissance to plan anything. They've misplanned the city. I don't look to General Motors to plan anything. They plan the people out of their future. All these people are being presented as the people who are going to plan for the future of the city. Well, if they were on a football team, these would have been the guys who would be sitting on the bench because they dropped the ball so much, to use the Super Bowl analogy, until they're losing the game. Unless Detroit captures the imagination of the youth, unless it diminishes the amount of youth who are going into the underground economy, which is being diminished in and of itself and ending up in prisons, jails, or just, you know, trying to survive. Some youth are leaving the city, leaving this area, because they want new options. Unless we do that, then this area is doomed.
Looking forward, Scott also believes that community institutions have a vital role to play in creating a just, sustainable model of development.
We're sitting in Bush's Gardens. This place has been here for maybe 50 years, and people come here because they want to get salmon croquettes. They want to come here and relate, and a lot of people have been coming back and forth. These kind of institutions, these kind of little businesses are the fiber, are the glue of the community. And I feel like glue is coming loose. I think that we have to reform it, you know, with some collective activities between small businesses, churches, and otherwise, and begin to create new, smaller ways of developing alternative economy. So you have greater democracy on the bottom end, as opposed to the top.
Whatever shape the future in Detroit takes, it is clear that it must be molded out of a more participatory culture. What would that look like in Gwen Mingo's vision for the city?
The ideal community, the ideal city, is where the residents have an input in the development. And they know they have, they feel they have an input in the development. And they benefit from the development. And when you have development like that, the spirit of the development is good. It's consistent to what we, quote-unquote, Americans are supposed to, our ideals, what we believe in. It shouldn't involve pushing people out of their neighborhoods and this urban black removal, whatever it is. But the ideal community would be that, where people, no matter who they are, can feel that they can live in a place that they will be treated with dignity and respect.
Yeah, but I love it here. Just think if I wasn't here. My uncles and cousins here. My struggles and come-ups here. We sense the trouble near. You bubble, we double dare. The block is ours
and
we don't want to share.
This is Jenny Lee and Alana Weaver of the Detroit Summer Collective, reporting for Black Box Radio.
Yeah, but I love it here. Just think if I wasn't here. My uncles and cousins here. My struggles and come-ups here. We sense the trouble near. You bubble, we double dare. The block is ours and we don't want to share.